about Klee? Okay, so if you had a chance to take a look, it's worth taking a look. I'll just refer to it briefly because it's a major shita within Hilchos Chanukah, practically, and it's definitely kedai to be aware of. And it's not really attached to any sugya per se, but if it is, it's attached to what we just discussed. So we'll just mention it in this context, and that is the Tshuvas Avnei Nezer in Siman Tav Kuf considers the question of whether or not a Hanukkah candle requires a kli. Does it have to be in a container? But he starts off by quoting the Sefer Chesed L'Avram of Rav Avram Azulai, who talks about different levels of what's the best to use for a menorah, what's a little bit less good. You can make a menorah out of gold, you can make a menorah out of silver, out of glass, etc., etc., going through all the different levels. And what he essentially extracts from this is not just that one substance is better than another, but that there is a focus on the container, that the kli that holds the Ner Chanukah has halachic significance, and that it has to have the halachic status of a kli, it should be able to stand on its own, etc., etc. So based on this, he then proceeds to have a discussion of bringing some proofs from the Gemara. Gemara Maseches Yuma talks about the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, and he gets the impression from there, and this is the key line that's often quoted as the position of the Avnei Nezer, that you require a kli for the menorah, and therefore if somebody on the Hanukkah is going to take a candle and stick it on the windowsill, to melt the bottom, put it on the windowsill, that's not sufficient. It's not just that there has to be a candle there, it's the halacha actually requires a container. Jonathan?
I remember when we did, let's say, Hatafra Nera, we saw there, I pointed out that there's a lot of differences between the Beis HaMikdash Chanukah and over here, it's not necessarily related. So why do the three-quarter of his proofs were relating?
Correct. So I will mention in a moment that Rav Ozner raises that objection. So we'll come back to that point in a second. But just in terms of what the Avnei Nezer says, so that's considered to be the Avnei Nezer's position. There is a story that was told that Rav Soloveitchik did exactly that when he was living in the dorm here, and he melted the bottom of a candle and put it on the windowsill, and that one of the MTA students, the YU students, informed him that he wasn't Yotze because of the Avnei Nezer, and Rav didn't agree. But it's an interesting question whether or not this is really what the Avnei Nezer says. The Avnei Nezer is quoted definitely by Major Poskim as maintaining this position, and he does say those words, but he says those words in the middle of the tshuva. It's not clear if that's his conclusion. You could definitely take that sentence out of the tshuva, and that's why it's definitely kedai to take a look. Again, a siman tav kuf in the tshuva Avnei Nezer, he certainly does say those words if you take it out of its context, but then he goes on to discuss the topic a little bit further, and he thinks there are also rayas the other way. First, he brings a number of proofs that he thinks this is the case, and it would lead you to that conclusion. And then he goes on to say that there are also proofs the other direction. And among those proofs is the sugya we just discussed. He quotes from the Rishonim who say that the Isser l'hishtamish la'ora has to do with huksel mitzvaso, has to do with that which is dedicated for the mitzvah, and that there as well the focus is only on the shemen and the psilos, and not on the kli that holds them. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's essentially where he starts from the discussion. He thinks that there's an indication from that discussion that there is no halachic significance to the kli specifically. He also quotes at the Maharal, and one of his svarim has a suffix about this and leaves it open. So in the last paragraph of the tshuva, it's really not clear what his conclusion is. He basically says that the raya is that it is significant, the raya is that it's not significant, and he thinks the Maharal's opinion is that it's basically a teiku, it's basically an unresolved question. So what does the Avnei Nezer really maintain, lahalacha, about this? I don't know if it's so clear. Again, you can quote one line out of context that he says, you're not yotze by putting it on the windowsill, but that's in the middle of the tshuva. I'm not 100% sure that's his maskana lahalacha, even though, again, great poskim certainly do quote him that way, including Rav Ozner. Rav Ozner in an essay that's published in the Sefer on Chanukah in Siman Beis, it's also in his tshuva somewhere in the Shevet Halevi. So he takes issue with the Avnei Nezer lahalacha. He discusses, he says there's a chumra that some want to suggest based on that, that he says that since the kli is significant, and since we have all these levels of how exactly things are graded in terms of their quality, so that if somebody has, let's say, a beautiful silver menorah, so there are those who want it to be mechadish, that if you have the silver menorah and you put the oil and the wicks in a glass container that then goes into the silver menorah, which is what most people do, so it says that would seem to defeat the purpose of the silver menorah, because then the glass becomes the kli, and glass is a lower level of importance than silver. And if you really want to accomplish what's discussed in the Svarim, that the silver menorah is a high level of hiddur, so then that would detract from what you're trying to accomplish. So in the end, he doesn't think that chumrah is worth factoring in. He says, first of all, he thinks the glass clearly becomes batel to the silver. It all becomes part of this whole silver entity. But in general, he's not necessarily convinced that the Avnei Nezer's point is correct, that we see the kli as having such significance in this way. And one of the points that he does raise is along the lines of what Jonathan said, that we're not really clear here to what extent are we going to look to the Beis HaMikdash for proofs. And part of the Avnei Nezer, it's not the Avnei Nezer's whole point, he has a couple of different angles, but part of his approach is to look to the Beis HaMikdash and the process of the preparing the menorah, the Beis HaMikdash. What was considered to be the preparing of the menorah? Is it just the creating of the wicks and the oil, or is it also the setting up of the menorah itself? So either way, says the Rav Osner, it's not really so clear that all the Rishonim accept, maybe some of the Rishonim, as we just saw again in the sugya that we just came off of Hishtamshus La'ura, some of the Rishonim assume that there is meant to be a parallel between the menorah, the Beis HaMikdash, and the menorahs in our houses, and other Rishonim don't take it that way. And he's not convinced that there's necessarily a path to follow along that approach. So he's not so enamored with the whole Avnei Nezer's conclusion, and the thought process he doesn't necessarily subscribe to either. Again, it gets to this question of what is considered to be huksel mitzvaso. So again, it's a direct outgrowth of our previous sugya, but also the Rishonim who build on a Beis HaMikdash household comparison, and what are the parameters of that? That's also a part of this. And again, it's an important halacha l'maisa question: can you be yotze with the candle? So one would seem to think that halacha l'maisa, it is hard to say, especially at the state of Soloveitchik or someone of similar stature, if you would see someone doing this, to tell them they're not yotze, is probably ill-advised for a number of reasons. But just on the substance, it's hard to say that you're not yotze, because the only one who ever thought to say you're not yotze is the Avnei Nezer. Again, it's a tremendous goal, but it's a chiddush. And even the Avnei Nezer himself does not clearly state that that is his conclusion, the halacha. So certainly, Safik Rabbanan Lakula in this issue, that after the fact, I would never tell anyone they're not yotze. If one wants to be machmer l'chathila, it's certainly room to do so, and that's what most people clearly do. But to tell anyone after the fact they're not yotze does not seem to be enough basis in halacha to say that, even according to the Avnei Nezer himself, certainly according to the broader spectrum of halacha. But it's also interesting just to keep this in mind as we get into the next sugya after this. It's a kind of a segue between the two, that we mentioned the Hiddur mitzvah is on the horizon as the next sugya. So the Hiddur by Chanukah, and this will be a major point of discussion that we'll get to next week, the Mahadrim and the Mahadrim of Chanukah is a whole different nature than we normally talk about Hiddur mitzvah when it comes to Kol HaTorah Kula. That's something we'll have to figure out exactly the relationship. So the idea that Mahadrim means that we light more candles, instead of just the one candle, we light eight candles, etc., etc., it's already a little bit of a different nature than what we talk about in halacha in general, that Hiddur mitzvah means having a nice mitzvah object, having a beautiful item that's used for a mitzvah. Of course, we're just coming off of Sukkot, so we know Hiddur mitzvah in that context, having a beautiful esrog and a beautiful lulav, that's a more familiar type of Hiddur mitzvah that we find in the rest of the Torah. So the sugya we're about to get to, the next sugya after the next two dots, is about a different, or seemingly a different kind of hiddur. But really Chanukah would have both, because the next sugya is not about beautiful menorahs, but presumably beautiful menorahs are a hiddur in the more standard sense. So that's how we know the idea also of having Shemen Zayis, having oil that's going to burn in a beautiful way, is also a different twist on the concept of Hidr Mitzvah in the context of Chanukah. So we have many different applications of the term in the context of Chanukah, layer upon layer upon layer. So in the more standard sense, presumably having a nice looking menorah is a Hidr Mitzvah in the classical sense. However, one could raise the question that maybe Hidr Mitzvah in the classical sense means a Chemtza Shal Mitzvah should be beautiful. So okay, so my Esrog, my Lulav should be beautiful, etc., etc., my Sefer Torah should be beautiful. But is a menorah a Chemtza Shal Mitzvah? Maybe it's really just a means to an end. Maybe it has no halachic significance. It's just a way of holding my candles so they don't burn down my house, but it doesn't have any halachic significance. So you could tie this into the whole discussion. You have to come on to the Avinezer and say, well, it's only worthwhile, especially because these fancy menorahs are very expensive. You're going to say it's only worthwhile spending your money on a fancy menorah according to the Avinezer? Or would you say that, no, even without coming on so far to the Avinezer, that you're mechuyev to have a kli, still this is part of the whole presentation of Neir Chanukah, and therefore it clearly contributes to a hiddur in the classical sense, and you should not worry about the spending of money on such a goal. So that's an interesting question to consider in the whole broader issue of Hidr Mitzvah as it applies to Chanukah, and what role does the menorah, which is the item of so much spending, what role does the menorah play in terms of Hidr Mitzvah as far as that's concerned? Okay, any questions as far as that's concerned? We'll also just mention one other ha'ara while we're talking also about comparisons to the Beis HaMikdash and to our home household menorahs. So I just noticed a ha'ara from one of the great Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, the Chelkas Yoav. The Tshuvas Chelkas Yoav, he has a few comments there. So he notes the following. You remember when we talked about Kavsa Zakakla, so Tosfos raised the question that if we say you can't use Shvach oils on Shabbos, and the Gemara says, oh, that shows you that you can't usur l'shtamish l'ora, that would mean mutter l'shtamish l'ora, that you're allowed to use it and we're afraid you're going to tilt it. So Tosus, you remember, Tosus asked the question, well, maybe the issue is that kavsa zakakla. Maybe the issue is that if it goes out, you have to relight it, and that's why you shouldn't use it on Shabbos. Right? You recall that question of Tosus. So the Chelkas Yoav has an interesting comment over there, where he says, maybe the reason you don't say like that is as follows. He says, maybe the reason you say Kavsa Zakakla, according to that opinion, is because that was the halacha in the Beis HaMikdash, as we discussed at the time, that if it went out, then you'd have to relight it. We recall we discussed that a little bit, and that's part, again, the question of where does the comparison continue and where does it break down. So if the Beis HaMikdash, they had to relight it, why shouldn't we have to do that in our households also? So says the Chelkas Yoav that is the position Kofsa Zokuk Lav, that it's based on the Beis HaMikdash.
What are you giving in this class?
Just a few more minutes.
Okay, so I'll come
what time do you have to come in?
It's about 12 o'clock.
Yeah,
just about that.
Okay.
So the Chelkas Yoav has an interesting point, or an interesting question. He says, what is the halacha in the Beis HaMikdash? What would the halacha be if the menorah went out on Shabbos? Says normally the rule is that the only things that are docha Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash are something which is zmano kavua and something for the tzibur. It has to be on behalf of the whole tzibur, and it has to be that it needs to be done at that time. So the initial lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash had to be done at a set time. But what happens if it goes out? That's not a predictable part of the process. So is that considered to be zmano kavua? So he thinks maybe there's room to say that if it would go out on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash, maybe it would not be mutter to relight it, because it's not in this category of zmano kavua. And then he mentions maybe he could say the other way. Maybe this is all an extension of its general function, in which case maybe it would be docha Shabbos. So he's not sure. He's not sure if it would be docha Shabbos if the menorah went out in the Beis HaMikdash. So he wants to suggest that maybe that's why Tosfos is assuming that even those who say Kavsa Zakakla would not apply that halacha to Shabbos. An interesting suggestion. Again, just following this whole path. Okay, any questions about any of that? All right, so we have a very few minutes just to kind of lay it on the table. We'll have to get into this a little bit more, and I'll give a more formal Mar Makoma sheet for tomorrow. But if you've been looking at the Rishonim, hopefully you see some of the issues. So, again, the Hilchos Chanukah is just fascinating the way it's presented in the Gemara. Everything is kind of mystery upon mystery, layer upon layer. So, as we've seen, this opening sugya, everything is kind of slipped in intertwining ways. So we have essentially three sugyas in our opening passage, and this is the third of them. That first it was kafsa zakuk la, or not zakuk la, then the iser l'hishtamish la'ura, and we saw that there are themes interacting between the two, such as what's the significance of an ongoing Hanukkah candle. So too, the ending passage in the Gemara, where the Gemara says that there is a shir of ad shetich l'regel menashuk, that the Hanukkah candles apparently should be lit. That's what it sounds like. Ad shetich l'regel menashuk. So the Gemara asks, that seems to contradict our halacha conclusion of kafsa ein zakuk lo, that we don't have to relight it. So then what does it mean to say that the candles should be going ad shetich l'regel menashuk? So the response the Gemara has to that is not that we have to relight it if it goes out. That should not be taken as the intent of Kafsa Zakuk La. Rather, the key line, the end line of the passage, Lavdi HaKafsa HaDamadik La. Well, rather this one line, Ti'ilo Adlik Madlik V'inami L'Shi'ura. So what we have to discuss is that one line is contains universes, contains multitudes. What exactly is going on? Right, that if you haven't lit, you should still light. Inami, what does the language of Inami usually mean in the Gemara? Or alternatively often, right? It means either this or that. So, or alternatively, you could say that l'shir. This is to tell you what the shir of presumably oil, or presumably candles, whatever it is, the fuel for the lighting, that's the significance of Achitech L'Regal Menashuk. So you could have thought that sentence means you have to keep it going the whole time. No, it doesn't mean that. It means one or both of these two things. So what we'll have to start discussing tomorrow, and keep your eyes very peeled for this, and you'll note, for example, there's a major difference between Tosfos and the Rambam. Did you guys get to see that a little bit? See, there's a major, major difference in how it reads. Difference halacha, right off the bat, you'll see practical differences, but also it's clearly a whole different reading of the Gemara between Tosfos and the Rambam in terms of what the relationship between those two answers are. And first off, are those two answers arguing with each other? Or is that one sentence? Right, so should Inami be read as also, or should it be read as alternatively? Right, so if you got to see Tosfos a little bit, you see he's clearly taking one side and how to read it. You see the Rush is clearly taking one side and how to read it. And the Rambam is clearly reading it differently with major ramifications, l'halacha. And then, if we get to see, again, I'll give you hopefully tomorrow morning, you should be able to get to see all these things, that if you look at the Rashba over here, the Rashba is going beyond Tosfos in a different direction. So there's a very major machlokas as to how to read this answer, and it's going to have ramifications for when is the permissible time to light. The major halachic issues we're going to have to discuss. We'll try to get as many of them done tomorrow, or certainly by Monday. When l'chachila can you light? When b'di'evet can you light? Is there a halacha of how much oil has to be in the menorah, or is that not actually the halachic conclusion? All of this is going to be impacted by how the sugya plays out, so God willing, tomorrow we'll get a little bit more exposure to that. So again, on a personal level, please, if we can try to maintain the sharpness of Seder, again, at least these next 2 days, I apologize if I'm not present so much.